Hello and welcome back to another episode of UFO Encounters Worldwide. This is your host, Jesse Peek, MUFON State Section Director in the state of Pennsylvania, city of Philadelphia. And today we are continuing our series, Women in the Field, highlighting women that are in the field of ufology and the paranormal and the research that they're doing. Today we're going to be welcoming author and researcher Sarah Sutherland. She is a forensic counselor and author, and she's a big part of what's called UAP Medical Coalition. We'll be diving into what all that entails, the books that she's written, and what you can expect as a reader. So we have a lot of information to go over today. So as we always like to say, strap on them seatbelts, we're going for a ride. Hello and welcome to episode 125 of UFO Encounters Worldwide. This is your host, Jesse Peek, MUFON State Section Director in the state of Pennsylvania, city of Philadelphia. And today we are continuing our series of Women in the Field, and we have special guest, author and researcher, Sarah Sutherland. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Jesse. I am so honored to be here. I'm excited.
Yes, very excited. You've been doing some really great work in the field, so it's great to highlight what you're doing and have you on and actually have a conversation with you for the first time. So I'm looking forward to today's episode. So thanks for coming
on. Me too. Yeah, I know we've kind of been watching each other and chatting with each other online, which I think that that's kind of how the community builds. But to be able to actually do this collaboration is something that I think is long overdue. So I'm excited.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. So yeah, I guess let's kick it off right away. Did you always have an interest in the field of the strange and unexplained, or was it kind of like an experience for you that kicked it all off?
That's such a great question. I feel like myself and most people that I interact with, it started against my will. Where, you know, paranormal things were creeping in the night, you know, things, whether they were projections of my own trauma or spiritual craziness or haunted houses. I feel like a lot of that stuff from a very early age was a part of my life. And then specifically UFOs and UAPs, which is kind of a weird long story, but like the short of it, I suppose, is that I used to have dreams. My sister and I both would have these dreams of something landing in the backyard and the grass being on fire. And we would both wake up and have a lot of panic. And we would talk about it over Rice Krispies and cereal, you know, like, but there was never anything definitive. And then when we were much older, her and I would go to psychic fairs with my grandmother and mother. Annually, we were a part of the Kansas City psychic circuit, and there was a hypnotist there that had worked with MUFON.
Okay.
And we each got a session. Now, for me, it instigated a whole journey leading down and eventually me becoming a licensed hypnotherapist. But for my sister, she started speaking a different language, and it led us to going to MUFON meetings to find other people like her. It led us down a lion person path. It led us into the weird and wild places up to that point, I didn't even know existed. And it's followed me ever since.
So to be clear, when you say a different language, this isn't like something we know of, correct? Are you saying this was something that you had no idea what she was speaking?
We had no idea what she was speaking, but after the session, the hypnotist did like a consult and said, you know, I've heard some of this before. You should go check out this. And she referenced us to go check out different Egyptian lion persons communities. And at that time, this was kind of I don't want to age myself, but this was before the age of the internet. And we went and walked down to this like old corridor, you know, auditorium. Oh, something crashed. There we are. So don't speak about it. We're speaking about it. And we had, you know, stale coffee and talked to other people who, I mean, we were big Star Trek fans, but this wasn't Klingon, you know, and we're both smart young ladies, but this wasn't anything we were familiar with. And She still doesn't know what she thinks of that experience. We have it on cassette tape, which is a kind of cool piece of evidence to be able to carry.
Absolutely.
But it took us down into, like, you know, her having these experiences that, you know, instigated me going into mental health, going into parapsychology and trying to find more objective things in the field. So they kind of meshed together eventually.
So you being in that field, have you seen like a kind of pushback when it comes to the UAP topic or paranormal, or is there people that have been open to the subject?
Ooh, you know, Jesse, this, I refer to it as no man's land, both because of the political connotation and like societal connotation and cultural connotation. It's weird because, you know, the paranormal and ghosts and spiritual stuff, like if it's on a Sunday or a Wednesday, that's okay. You know, if it's at a ghost hunters convention or if it's at a Ghostbusters premiere, it's cool. It's cool. But in the realm of trying to be a credible, you know, I'm working on my doctorate and I remember doing these letters of referrals and recommendations and like some establishments, University of St. Thomas, University St. Mary's, like I could go down the list, majority of them are Catholic. They will have nothing to do with me because I've written papers and books within parapsychology and, you know, have gone over to Europe and tried to study with them and talked with the Vatican and tried to work with them and like having my fingers in these areas for me personally and professionally to just give clients that are having strange experiences a range of options to start from. kind of depends on what day and to whom I'm talking to. And it's only been recently in like the UAP UFO disclosure world where, you know, Graves and different military personnel, people with, as long as we're not calling them mentally ill on the wrong news article, if we're really referring to them as national heroes, aviators, educated professional men, and there's a slew of them. And women, age range, demographic, but all like military, credible, and now speaking out of their NDAs, you know, they're retired, they're to this precipice where they're going to talk about it, they're going to risk it, and the disclosure has been opened. Only, I would say, in the last few years has it gone from like, oh, that's cool, that's weird, that's demonic, that's wild, to now, where people a little bit more professional.
Okay.
People in the mental health community. Like when I work with the UAP Medical Coalition, I joined them about a year and a half ago because me working as a mental health provider, I need to be able to provide evidence-based, objective modalities. Like I don't want to just be, you know, doing EMDR and light shows. I want to have science-based research.
Absolutely.
And things like Havana syndrome.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
These things creeping into the science realm. America's latent. We're behind. I don't know. I mean, I know why, but we don't know why, but we know why, right?
Right. So have you experienced anybody that has come to you or in your field or profession that has actually said, you know, I'm having problems with, you know, this strange, unexplainable thing that I have no idea what it is? Have you experienced that?
Yeah, I would say, you know, whether it's casually where like you're at a paranormal convention, you're at a Comic-Con, you're at somewhere where there's like a sci-fi fandom realm of people sitting around, you know, even at dinner or like Terry Brooks, other authors describing where some of their dreams come from, where some of their intuition and some of their trauma stems from and some of their, you know, things that they've seen out on the beach or in the military. A lot of my family work in the Marines, some in the Navy, and being able to go to family reunions and hear more of those people speaking up that wouldn't once do that. I would say, you know, without putting someone out on, you know, the mental health line and being like, well, they told me that they were struggling. But like a lot of people do mention the stress, the depression, the experiencer syndrome, the like hitchhiker phenomenon of like the paranoia and the anxiety that continues to compound as you kind of the more you talk about it,
right?
Maybe. And I think of like Jody Cook. He was probably one of the first he's an author that was talking about Bigfoot. He was on a military base and had an experience with Bigfoot, and he waited until he retired to later share the story. And then like a plethora of people came in behind him, and now he does like dog man research and stuff. And people like that, they're like on the fringe in the gray, but it seems to be more and more, which is a good thing.
Absolutely. I agree there. So you're a forensic counselor. Can you explain what that is so everybody understands?
Yeah. For all the people who are psychologists and upset, it's basically, I have my master's degree and I work, primarily with like military and private contractors. So I work nationally and internationally with case consults, specifically in violent sex crime. So like right now I'm under contract with Minnesota, and I work with violent sex offenders here. And so for the last 3 years, I've been working in intimate crime. And some of that is like human trafficking related. Some of those are the assessments and kits that we take, and privacy and body autonomy and consent and permission. And these themes, they ride really close to conspiracy theory.
Right.
They ride really close to politics and borders and what we call aliens. And, you know, my specialty is in neuro-linguistic programming. So I do a lot of assessments, interviews, and interrogations. And that is really about the language that we're using. So UFO, now UAP, experiencer versus abductee.
Right.
Alien. Are we talking like immigrant, or are we talking ET? Like all of these language things, I deal with them almost politically and in a violent crime way. It very much helps when I'm working with like UAP Medical Coalition and mental health policies, okay, body autonomy, especially.
Okay.
Stuff like that. Yeah.
So you've also, your recent research includes integrated AI, which is also a big part of UFO and paranormal stuff as well, and the field. So could you talk about that a little bit?
Oh my gosh, Jesse. I mean, Jesse, if we had video, you'd probably see me like maybe puking in my mouth here, because like even recently, and so I'll say this just came up a few days ago, where probation officers reached out and said, hey, you know, have you guys dealt with clients utilizing AI for pornographic reasons? And it comes down to me, because I've been doing this presentation and working in this realm for about a year, like specifically the Uncanny Valley. So if you like Google Uncanny Valley, the psychological concepts of what a person finds to be empathetically personified, like a person that they can connect with. So when I'm dealing with rapists or people that are, you know, very cold about their intimacy, we're trying to determine how they build that connection. Very much related to robotic stuff. And do no harm and consent and permission. Very much related to ChatGPT and the way that we should be talking with our AI. And then you start like looking at Westworld. It was a really good show that came out a few years back.
Yes.
And that's what really instigated it for me, because I had just started working out in sex crime at that point. And I thought, we are going to have Jude Law sex robots. And with that, people are going to be like beheading their sex robots and doing really heinous things to their sex robots. And should we be keeping that information? Where is that information going to go? Where is that metadata going? Is that a fusion center near you, or is that bought and sold? Is that privacy, you know? And in my field, we're having a lot of struggle with people. Maybe you have your girlfriend's Instagram, you guys break up, you take two or three Instagram videos that have her face and her voice, and you can use your AI to put it onto your favorite porn video.
Right.
And then you have like customized porn that then becomes revenge porn, because you can upload it and the facial recognition doesn't differentiate whether that's you, the person, or not. This is a big deal.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
This is a huge deal.
We see it on the news.
And then for me, I'm dealing with, you know, clients that you know, their life very much changes when they become a sex offender. And a sex offender can be someone, you know, peeing outside their vehicle, indecent exposure, revenge porn. It could be all sorts of things. It doesn't necessarily mean crazy pedophilia, but UFO stuff, you know, we deal with rape and female genital mutilation and reproductive phenomenons and time loss and stuff that you see with like sexual trauma, some of the same symptoms. So trying to differentiate if someone said something came to them in the night, they weren't sure what it was, they don't remember the face, but this is what happened and they actually do have trauma, and you know, you do a rape kit, this is going to be stored in the same place as sex crime stuff.
Absolutely.
So it kind of, you know, I see it overlapping, and as we need policy around it, the AI stuff and the cyber psychology stuff, how people act online, the numerous personalities that we have, how we treat our AI, they're like really relevant, but somehow not ever discussed. And that like makes me nervous.
Absolutely. I agree. Yeah.
Makes me nervous, Jesse. So I'm glad that you and I are talking about it, because I feel like all I can do is like puke out some of the issues that we're having in the field, but kind of like watching the TikTok hearings in this last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
You see some of the policymakers like, well, is that AI going to come and take my face in the night? And it's like, no, it's kind of like when you scanned your face for your taxes this year and it required facial recognition. It kind of,
well, I guess,
you know,
that's kind of my next question that I was going to ask you, you know, seeing all this, you know, do you think we've seen Hawkins and Musk and all of them say, you know, AI, we have to watch out for it. What is your opinion on that? Do you think we have to pay attention, and do we think it's going to get out of hand? Do we think it's going to take that next step?
Yeah, I'm not a Will Smith fan, so I've not seen some of his alien movies with the exception of like Independence Day, guys. So, but I do think that.
Do you think we're implementing it too much into our lives today?
Yes, because, you know, just even recently in the news, like in the last 48 hours, the IRS had to come out with some audits that they had been found guilty, you know, utilizing AI, because it's an indirect, you know, you put in a command and, you know, bully Jesse online, and it spits out, you know, something, and then you cut and paste that. It's not your words, it's the words of AI. And so people like indirectly lose their responsibility as they move farther and farther from the source. Like it's the strange Kitty Genovese effect online, and companies use AI to be efficient. And of course, money makers are going to use AI that allows you to make more money,
right?
But we're not thinking of that. Oh, I think people fight over who said it, whether it was Benjamin Franklin or whomever, the like those who are willing to sell their liberty for privacy deserve neither. And I feel like we're there. We already gave it away, you know, and that makes me nervous for like my children or, you know,
100%.
You and I. Yeah. It's very much out of our hands. I don't know how we would go back.
I don't think you can, really.
I don't think you can.
I mean, look at everybody today that live on their phones. There's no way you could take that away from us, and especially the young kids today, the younger generation.
It's so
they don't know how to
wild.
Live without it. You know?
And yeah.
So, with this AI in the UFO field, do you think that there has been technologies that we haven't, you know, that we're not aware of, that the government may have, or that ET has crashed here before, and has some of that come from what we have today? And
I do, you know, not to really throw myself into a conspiracy hole, but I do. I feel like a lot of the military interviews that you hear, and a lot of the like death confessions and books and things that people write, that, you know, coincidentally don't really become that popular. You know, people will say like, well, the stuff Armstrong says because he's got dementia, poor guy. And it's like, you know, man, some of what these gentlemen and people are sharing, it's important. And man, there's some weird alien footage, that like alien footage. I don't think it's real. I don't know if it's real, but that alien interview from way back.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
and he's like, what do we have to worry about? And the alien says AI.
Yeah.
And now when I watch that, I do have a weird emotional response that I didn't once have before. It's kind of like reading the book 1984 now. It's scary because it is very much, you know, Blade Runner kind of stuff, Minority Report even kind of stuff. I deal with Minority Report type concepts and sex crime where it's bait and switch of agents pretending to be someone that they're not to hook someone online, and then there's never a real victim.
Right.
We get into that where what if AI instigates someone who's mentally unstable and encourages them to do something in a language that speaks to doing harm, and then that person does harm, like whose fault is it going to be?
It starts getting very fuzzy. It's interesting. Yeah. All right, but let's go ahead and take our break, and when we get back, we can kind of talk about you're an author of two books, which I definitely want to touch on, and definitely want to get into UAP Med with you, because some important work being done over there as well. So let's go ahead and take our break, and we'll be back right after these messages. Hello, everybody. This is your host, Jesse Peek. I'm happy to announce coming up this year in 2024, on May 4th, is the Curiosities Festival, which will include speakers in the field of UFOlogy, the paranormal, and Bigfoot. We'll also be having live performances throughout the day, live bands, food, activities, and more. Tickets will only be $5 a person, and it'll be from 12 p.m. to 7 p.m. at night. Again, this is for the 2024 Curiosities Festival. Get this information over to our website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com. We look forward to seeing you there.
UFO Encounters Worldwide wants to hear from you. Have an experience or a sighting you want to share? Contact your host, Jesse Peek, at ufoencountersworldwide@gmail.com today.
This is your host, Jesse Peek. Check out our official website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com. Read up on UFO articles, including abductions, close encounters, sighting cases, megalithic structures, and more. Also, check out our new Facebook group. You'll get updates on guests every week, new events coming up, and our schedule of who we're going to have on in the future. Again, that's UFO Encounters Worldwide Facebook group, and our website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com.
Have you always been curious about the unknown, the unexplainable? Do you find yourself intrigued by the mysterious and paranormal side of our world? Then let's find out, with co-host Diego, is the podcast for you. Join in on an adventure into the world of the inexplicable and get insights from experienced researchers, investigators, and experts. Listen to mind-bending discussions and fascinating stories as Let's Find Out explores the strange, mysterious, and paranormal. Let's Find Out with co-host Diego is a unique and engaging podcast that uncovers the mysteries of the cryptic and unknown. With insightful interviews and discussions, they discover the very latest theories, discoveries, and investigations that may someday give us the final answer as to what may be behind the veil of reality. Available on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, YouTube, iHeartRadio, Radio Public, TuneIn, and Rumble.
UFO Encounters Worldwide would like to announce our brand new home at the UNX Network. Listen to us every Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to hear UFO Encounters Worldwide podcast. That's on the UNX Network. All right, welcome back to the second half of episode 125. I'm sitting down with author and researcher Sarah Sutherland, and we're continuing our series of women in the field. So Sarah, you are an author of two books. The first one you written in 2015 is called Haunted by the Abyss. Could you tell us a little bit about that, where that inspiration came from, what the reader can expect, you know?
Yeah. And I feel like I need to tell anyone who like gets it, finds it, and gets the last few first editions that there's a second, the second edition is coming out at the end of this year, which I'm really excited about because I feel like, you know, it'll be coming up almost on 10 years. And I've had a lot of strange, weird, wild phenomenon, even UAP related since then that I want to add. And of course, you know, the 7 or 8 edits that I have found that I need to fix. But that was a book that came to me magically because at the time I was speaking at paranormal conventions and events and like Dragon Con and about spontaneous human combustion and mental health telepathy and like, you know, psychopathy and comic book villains and fun things. And a Llewellyn book agent came up to me and said, "Wow, have you ever thought of writing a book?" And I thought, well, yeah, I just don't ever have the time or money to sit down and do it. And they're like, well, what if we paid you to do that? And could you do it? And I was like, well, yeah, I could. If someone paid me, you bet. And so, you know, they gave me a small advance and I wrote the book. And then like within a few months, it was out and on Amazon and, you know, around the world in different languages. And I thought, wow, that seemed easier than it should have been. Now, of course, my second book, that first one is a compilation of like short stories that are personal, very personal experiences. And I feel like it just came about because I'd go to these conventions and people would ask the same questions, you know, what's the scariest place you've ever been? Or have you ever experienced a demon? And it's not that I don't mind answering it 120 times, but at one point I thought, man, it sure would be nice to say you could read it in my book rather than being rushed through trying to answer it and feeling like maybe I'm not giving them the best answer because it's the 8th time I've answered it today.
Right.
So that's why I wrote that. And it really was personal, and rereading it, knowing, wow, I should maybe share a little less and a little more in my next version. And it's a little bit different and completely different than the experience with my second book, which I self-published with a dear friend of mine who is a physics major and professional person working for the Department of Energy. And he and I were at a convention talking about quantum mechanics and the paranormal. And like, man, I really wish there was a book that you could read through that was just an easy to read conversation between two people yakking about these things. Well, what the hell? Let's go ahead and write one. And so we did, which I don't think I'll ever co-author again because it's so difficult to go between different writing styles.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely.
You know, and you want to talk forever and then that person maybe doesn't talk much and then, you know, you're trying to find a harmony, and that was difficult, but I think we did our best with it. And then Grant Wilson from Taps, you know, put it out on his tweet or internet feed that he was reading it, and it kind of blew up, which was really nice and really cool that he did that. And they highlighted it on a few like shows online, and
it
was like, I didn't have to do a whole lot of promotion on that. It seemed to kind of be circulated between people in the field, and it was appreciated, and I appreciated it. And so I would love to write more in the science realm, but getting a publisher to pay you in advance to do that is really difficult. Like, there's just not a lot in the science writing. And so until I become independently wealthy, Jesse, that is on my list. But yeah, those two you can both find on Amazon. Or you can message me directly and I can get you a signed copy. So
awesome.
Whatever you prefer. Yeah.
Sounds good. I'll make sure I put your information in the description so everybody can get a hold of you and check that stuff out. Ask questions, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
So you mentioned, you know, you were featured at Comic-Con, Dragon Con, but you also did A&E Haunted America. And you went to 13 different countries to assess these cases. Could you talk about that a little bit? What you found, what you investigated, what you got into? How was the traveling? All that good stuff?
So a lot of my traveling was able to be done like privately and with education. And so with my undergraduate in criminal justice and understanding like mental health, schizophrenia in different countries, which ranges from like Germany, Austria, Liechtenstein, France, England, Canada, Mexico. And then ended up with all the cases of all the wild and weird things, you know, A&E, I had worked with a few of the cases, but never been on TV. I didn't really want to be on TV.
Right.
Because of that, like trying to be a professional working in law enforcement and just, you know, TV stuff is edited. It's TV.
Absolutely.
But I had just birthed a baby. I did not have much money. And I had been like praying for a miracle. My mother died. And I was like, I just want God, give me an opportunity. And like the next day, A&E called me for filming. And I felt really like spiritually stuck at whether or not I should deny that immediate opportunity that was given. So I took it. And I was like, you know what? Maybe this will be a cool thing. Maybe this will be a fun adventure. And it was a learning experience because, you know, I arrived on the case and there was some really interesting and cool stuff behind what initiated A&E's interest. And then those episodes were like a docuseries that were shown and like haunted items and psychometry and some of those related themes were in my episode. And I filmed, I thought it was really great. I was really excited about it. And then like, well, I think it was like 2 years before it ever aired. Like, you know, you get paid a few $100, you go home and then you never hear anything. And then suddenly I woke up to 127 Facebook notifications one morning and it was people online going, who is this person anyway? And where, you know, and all the messages and a few extra book sales, which was nice. And I thought, oh, so this is how it happens. And I was really nervous to watch myself on TV. I didn't watch the episode for a while. And then I watched it late one night and it was not at all what we filmed.
Oh, man. Really?
There was like CGI and extra effects added to like tell the story.
Oh.
You know, which that's at the shame. Time I was like, okay, you know, I had right. no control over any of that at all. And like, there was no discussion of it for anybody that was involved. And I don't know, I found it entertaining. I found it entertaining, which I think is what A&E is going for.
Absolutely.
And I wondered after that, I was like, man, I would love, you know, some friends of mine in the field that is their career, is filming some of those television shows professionally and for always. And it's stressful because some of it is not authentic. And for me, that I'm a control freak, not like freaky, but like, you know, I have a little OCD about right. something I'm attached to.
Absolutely. That's your name. That's your person, you know, you care about that. I get that.
Yeah. So after that experience, I thought, you know what? I don't know if I want to do any of that. I think I might just remain, you know, behind the scenes. And so for me, it's just been continued. Like, I work with the University of Chicago and their School of Professional Psychology has a transpersonal psychology degree program where their students get to go to the Vatican and they get to go into the realms of differentiating between a possession and mental illness and like what are the criteria for exorcism and what, you know, evidence-based things are we doing to make sure we're not harming someone. And whoa, you know, being able to look into some of those things around like later using it for prisoner of war stuff, military related standard operating procedures, what's okay when, you know, officers discharging their weapon and taking a life, when is it okay, when is it not? It very much relates to end of life, non-denominational end of life, death discussions and crisis discussions and things that I do in my work. So, you know, people on death row that don't have anyone there with them and they're violent sex offenders and they would just like someone to read the Bible before they get put to death or things like that. You know, people deserve someone and people that discharge their weapon, they don't talk about that, or take a life, they don't talk about that. And it trickles all the way back down into like taboo things that people don't want to talk about that are, you know, deep and dark. And that goes into the paranormal and into the alien UAP stuff almost in an instant.
Absolutely. I agree.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't want to talk about that either. You know, it's a scary situation, especially when you don't think you have anybody on your side and you're kind of telling your story for the first time. You don't know who to tell it to, who's it safe with, you know?
Yeah, because if you go to the doctor, man, they might put you on Haldol, Ativan, a 93-hour hold, and you might lose your job. You might be able to no longer carry a weapon if you're a police officer. You have a disability if you're, you know, diagnosed with PTSD.
That's
or something like that.
And I know many people that are in mental institutions, you know what I mean? And I think, you know, that's why I started out with UAP Med, because I was so angry with that. You know what I mean? I was so mad that these people were experiencing something and trusting these individuals with that experience just to have it shut down and be put away and not really help the person. You know what I mean? And it's a shame. It really is. But speaking of that, you're a big part of UAP Medical Coalition. So do you want to talk about that a little bit? What you guys are up to, where you're at with that?
Absolutely. So for anyone who's unfamiliar, the UAP Medical Coalition, you can go to uapmed.org. You can check it out online. It is basically just a coalition, a network of different organizations ranging from OPUS to MUFON chapters to individual clinicians and providers, as well as policymakers, lawmakers, politicians, attorneys, doctors. A lot of people working in STEM, science, math, educated related fields that, just like you, Jesse, they see this demand for people having experiences and needing to know where to go. And I started with them about a year and a half ago and really, you know, in a volunteer position saying, hey, I work in mental health. I work in crisis and trauma. I'm doing a lot of like human and sex trafficking. And I see some familiar themes. I'm looking for scholarships and grants. You know, I want to work with other people in the field and get my foot in the door somehow. How can I help? And for that motivation of like trying to find the funding for finishing my doctorate, the networking and the research and some of the meetings that have been held, I mean, some of the people in those disclosure hearings, a lot of our UAP Medical Coalition members were at and on that board and at that hearing. And military members that, you know, they have a lot of classified information, but they have a lot of valid passion and motivation to be present. Helping us at the UAP Med, you know, put out things like media flashes, PRs, free downloadable templates so that you can reach out to your representatives and lawmakers and say, hey, are you aware of this phenomenon? You know, if all of a sudden we have something come out of the sky, and it doesn't have to be aliens or ET or Will Smith, it could be anything that is unidentified or anomalous. And that if it's a phenomenon that poses a threat, which I think a lot do, hell, birds flying out of the sky en masse.
Absolutely.
You know, like these weird lights and weapons, Maui, I mean, fires, like it gets into some weird, fun ball lighting, static climate change, policy spaces where like, if you don't know what you're talking about and somebody up there is having a day in the office, can you please not go golfing? Can you please, you know, contact UAP Med? Let us give you some information, give you a quick download with some good sources so that you can stand up and say yay or nay in a way that best supports the community. Because man, if someone calls 911 and you say, 911, what's your emergency? And they say, I've got 8-foot tall green things coming at me like that Miami event or that Las Vegas situation or all sorts of, I mean, there's all sorts of scenarios and you know, who you can call.
Exactly. So if someone wanted to get that information, what's the steps they should take to get that?
Yeah. Well, if you go to, like, for example, uapmed.org, or for, like, you, Jesse, working with MUFON, MUFON is a well-established organization with chapters all over the country, even world, I think now.
Yep.
So, and UAPMed also works internationally with the Netherlands, with Australia, with a few different countries, France. Oh, France is great. And if you go to that website, you're going to be able to see, you know, contact us or frequently asked questions. There's also a survey, because we do compile research and things of that nature for our policies and related stuff. But it gives you a breakdown of people you can call. And so it's not just, you know, 988 for a mental health emergency or 911 for something, you know, physiologically related, but that if you have the time to reach out to a clinician or a provider near you, that, you know, while the UAP Med is doing stuff like helping the DSM and standard manuals figure out how to charge your bill, your insurance for the stuff, that you can maybe find a MUFON meeting near you. You can find someone to talk to who's not going to ostracize you, exile you, make you feel like you're less than or crazy, and that might even be able to help you calm down, ground your body, get a sense of control, and not feel so discombobulated. That's ultimately the goal, is that people can find some resource to help them mitigate the stress and crisis and trauma that comes with usually having some type of a experience.
Right. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Have you guys seen a big interest? Have you guys been getting feedback from experiencers, contactees, even educators and medical professionals being interested in UAP Med?
Absolutely. I would say in just the year and a half that I've been with UAP Med, I've seen it go from like 5 to 7 people generally to like more than 300 that integrate themselves in and out of the meetings. And we have, you know, monthly watering hole meetings where we jump on, and we've collaborated with the Galileo Project and NASA and a few different people in and out of their own research stuff, like, you know, Representative Luna, who's talking about the ocean and transmedium type stuff. There's a lot of different little areas. We have a media area that people can join if they are interested in doing t-shirts or stickers to go on the back of the gas station stalls, like human trafficking stickers, to say, hey, you are not alone. The truth is here. You know, these kinds of stickers that UAP Med is hoping to get out and into the circulation, so that people are talking more, they're seeing it more, that the exposure is a little bit more in our narrative and not just one of who knows, you know?
Yeah.
And that, yeah, that we as hitchhikers of the galaxy, we have our towel and we are ready, you know?
Yeah.
That's what we want to do.
I think it's great. I think it's just definitely something that, and something people should take advantage of and reach out if they have questions, for sure. I think it's going to be a big thing in the future, especially with the, within the field, you know, and it's great work you guys are doing. Can you give out the website and, you know, where, what social media platforms you are on? This way everybody can have that.
Yeah. So if you're interested in UAP Med, just uapmed.org. If you're interested in Paranormal Sarah things, I'm revamping my paranormalsarah.com. So you'll go there and it'll go womp, womp, womp. Instead, you can check out Capturing Time Photos, photography.com. You can Google Paranormal Sarah. I'm on Twitter, X Twitter. What are we calling it? I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I do a lot of portrait photography in my spare time, so you'll usually see a lot of visual references, but I also try and do that to spruce up my stuff on like Substack or LinkedIn that are more articles and formal publications. But Paranormal Sarah is really going to be the online alias you'll find me most under, because I'm a woman with many names. So getting married and divorced, I've got all sorts of passports like Jason Bourne.
Okay.
But you can also email me directly at theparanormalsarah, S-A-R-A-H, like the Bible, heaven forbid, @gmail.com. And I'll do my best to get right back to you. And I really do hope that people will listen and share this episode and reach out and contact us, especially if you're interested in joining the UAP efforts and the science community and making it a little bit more credible. We'd love to have you.
That's awesome. I'll make sure I put the links in the description. This way people can get them there too as well. I have one last question, and it's just it's a broad question. You know, with everything going on today and the hearings, what is your thoughts on the government handling the UFO phenomenon in general? Do you think we're headed in the right direction? Do you think there's things that need to be done specifically, or what is your thought generally on that?
So I would say that for the general American public to keep their pulse on or their eye on transmedium. So transmedium is going to be really, really important, whether you're on the fringe for ascension and 3D, 5D, or you're, you know, getting into holistic hippie stuff with vibrations and copper in one hand and iron in the other, or, you know, you're looking at archaeology, uncovering Atlantis and ancient thing. It really comes down to airspace, water space, and land space. So a lot of the disclosure and policies are held up right now about our personal autonomy as it relates in transmedium spaces. So that circles back around to when we're on VR, when we're on AI, when we're on the internet operating as paranormal Sarah, what and whom am I responsible for, and what and how much of that metadata, especially with like Elon Musk's Neuralink and different integrations that we are making as humans, how much of our body is ours, how much of our DNA is ours, and the who, what, when, where, and why, that if we have an alien implant, some of those laws state that due to national defense and security measures, any and all alien artifacts are taken into no due process, scientific classification, and you're gone. So then are you considered an artificial alien artifact because a part of you has been experienced? That would be relevant. And if so, for how long? Havana syndrome, for how long? When were you exposed? These kinds of things are going to slow down the ability for people to feel safe reporting and to whom they report to. And the legal system isn't really prepared with where that line stops with our permission and our autonomy. So that transmedium space is really important to pay attention to.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on today. I think that's great. It was a great answer. I usually ask everybody that just to get the opinion on where everybody thinks we're at today. You know what I mean? I like to hear all the different possibilities and things people have on their minds. So, but I appreciate you coming on today for the series Women in the Field, doing some great work, Sarah. Absolutely great work. I appreciate your time today. I appreciate you going through everything. I'll make sure I put all your book links in the description of the episode. And thank you for coming on today.
Thank you, Jesse. It's an absolute honor. And again, for anyone listening, it's really that observation theory. I don't feel like I exist if I'm not being received. And so for everyone listening and for you giving me this time, I really appreciate you.
No problem. Well, thank you again for coming on. And I want to thank everybody for listening to episode 125 of UFO Encounters Worldwide. If you guys are interested in the upcoming May 4th Curiosities Festival in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, our tickets are on sale now. It's $5 a person for the entire day. We are having speakers on the UFO phenomenon. We're having live performances, live bands, all that kind of good stuff. You can get all that information over our website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com. And we will be back next week with another special guest. And until next time, keep your eyes in the sky. Well, another amazing episode in our series, Women in the Field, with our special guest today, author and researcher, Sarah Sutherland. I want to thank her for coming on today and sharing all that information with us. She's doing some amazing work with UAP Med and just in the field in general. So go check her out. Her LinkedIn information is in the description of the episode below, and you can get her on Twitter as well. So thank you again, Sarah. Next week, we're going to be continuing our series, Women in the Field, with special guest Constance Victoria Briggs. She's been doing some really great work in the field for a long time. I've seen her all around in the field, so we're going to have her on to talk about what she's been up to. So another great episode for this month in the series. And I want to thank everybody for tuning into today's episode. Make sure if you guys are interested in the upcoming May 4th Curiosities Festival, you can go over to our website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com, get all the information for what's going to be at the festival, as well as tickets. Tickets are only $5 for the entire day, and that includes your speaker sessions, your live performances, there's live bands, over 100 vendors. It's going to be a full day full of entertainment. So definitely come. Tickets are $5 a person, or you get a family 5-pack for $20. And that link is over at our website. So I hope to see you guys there, and I will see you guys next week for another amazing episode of UFO Encounters Worldwide. So keep your eyes in the sky.